As the attack took place, Mr. Bush was on his way to an elementary school in Florida. When informed of the first plane hitting the World Trade Center, where terrorists had struck just 8 years prior, Mr. Bush decided to go ahead with his photo opportunity. When the second plane hit the tower, his chief of staff entered the classroom and told Mr. Bush, "The nation is under attack." Not knowing what to do, with no one telling him what to do, and no Secret Service rushing in to take him to safety, Mr. Bush just sat there and continued to read My Pet Goat with the children.
You're listening to part three of our 9/11 deep dive. 9/11 conspiracies, 9/11 conspiracy theories. Part three, 9/11 as a mass ritual book club. The world's most dangerous book, written by S.K. Bain. Now, previously, because I already know you've been on this journey, you listened to part one, where we talked about the false flags, the pop culture, predictive programming, kind of mainstream stuff, right? And then in part two, we talked about the occult symbolism and the twin pillars and the numbers 9 and 11. And in the final two parts of our 9/11 deep dive, part three and part four, we're going to go through this book written by S.K. Bain, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual. A very good book. I highly recommend it. Will I get S.K. Bain on here? I think so. Sam Tripoli and crew had S.K. Bain on Tinfoil Hat a few weeks ago. I didn't know that he was doing interviews. I thought this was sort of anonymous, one-time kind of dude. But he wrote this book and I read it and we're going to talk about it. Again, highly recommend it. Over the next two shows, I'll go through some ideas from the book, and believe it or not, there's going to be a lot more in the book that I'm not even going to touch on. Because as you know, my purpose and my intent of going through the 9/11 deep dive shows here would be to explore the occult symbolism, the occult elements here. I don't get into geopolitical things, really. Not my cup of tea, not my forte. There's lots of people that cover that kind of stuff if you're into it. You know, my feelings, I feel like politics is just another element of theater. But hey, you know. Regardless, I don't stay abreast on things as well as I should for me to comment on those things, so I don't. So there you go. If you want more opinionated stances, you can listen to the show I do with Josie Wiseup. That's my lovely wife, called Breaking Social Norms. It's got their own free feed, and if you're already on my Rockfin team, you get the uncensored version. It's got its own Patreon and everything. So anyway, there's a whole world to explore if you want to get into more of the opinion, political ideas. That's kind of where we talk about it over there, and it's just for fun. Just for fun. Now, in today's book club, I'm going to read to you. Again, I can't emphasize enough, this is one of the best conspiracy books I've ever read. For me personally, it hit all the spots, right? It hit all my spots. That sounds bad. But it hit all my spots. And I'm going to read to you a quick excerpt from page 144. And then we're going to deep dive into the whole book. But this excerpt kind of explains the setup and the attitude and the ideas that you're going to hear about for the next two shows. Let's go. The ceremony officially commences as American Airlines Flight 11, ritually marked, consecrated with the number of magic itself, slams into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, declaring the initiation of a magical operation. President and Bonesman George W. Bush arrives at Booker Elementary School in Sarasota, Florida, the state which had given him the presidency in 2000 and where his brother Jeb is governor, and where the 9/11 ringleader and hijacker pilot of American Airlines 11, Mohammed Atta, had received part of his flight training. The commander-in-chief is a high priest is in paradise, presiding over a black mass, complete with little black children chanting out the words of the pet goat, about which Osama bin Laden will later crack jokes on Al Jazeera, saying that Bush was more occupied with the goat and its budding than the planes and their budding of the skyscrapers. Invoking Baphomet, even as United Airlines Flight 175 slams into the South Tower, an act designed to invoke Aleister Crowley's Liber 175, the book of uniting to a particular deity by devotion. You can see why I like this book, right? Let me keep reading. They are stating their intentions and declaring their devotion not simply to Satan, but also to Crowley. As has been made evident, the entire day's proceedings constitute no less than an ode to Aleister Crowley, not to be confused with Ozzy Osbourne's literal ode to Crowley. Thus, the two concrete and steel recreations of the fabled Pillar of Hermes, the god of commerce and trade, and also of thieves and robbers, stand mortally wounded, as Hermes himself prepares to undertake his traditional role as psychopomp, escort of the souls of the dead to the underworld. In the tarot, the tower card has been known as the House of the Damned, and the Twin Towers have become enormous sacrificial altars. Very soon, the doorway between the two pillars will be opened, and the veil of Isis will be symbolically torn asunder, as the towers come crashing to the ground and a gateway to hell esoterically created. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. Opening up the gates, the twin pillars, and all these things. The gateway to hell. Reminiscent of the Italian horror movies. What was it? Good one, Isaac. This is a trilogy. Lucio Fulci. The City of the Living Dead, right? With the house by the cemetery and all those things, right? Anyway, the idea is that channeling entities, channeling spirits, doing magical operations, they are trying to spiritually open the gates to hell. Now, the author, S.K. Bain, he's an expert on Kabbalah. He's a conspiracy guy. And in the book, you'll notice there's a foreword by Peter Lavenda. Yeah, I've talked about Peter many times. Tried to get him on my show. I don't get a lot of guests on the show because, scheduling is such a nightmare. For me, personally, it's not my guest's fault. It's my fault. But Peter Lavenda is a guy that I would drop everything if I could get him on here. So if you know Peter Lavenda, you tell him to get a hold of me. I've been attempting to get a hold of him because he knows. Here's a guy who knows the whole script from start to finish. I know he does because I've read his books. Not all of them, most of them. There's also contributions in the book from William Ramsey, who I have had on the show, and Michael Hoffman, who wrote a great book about secret societies and the psychological operations, coming from a similar viewpoint as well, that I also have, viewing this world as one big ritualistic theater. We're all pawns watching, being duped, being led down the path that they want to carve. But not me. I'm trying to expose the path. Anyway, the book is divided into sections. You've got the production, the producers, and the book and the score. And they talk a lot about, what I like about this book is they talk about initiation rituals. And he describes it as requiring 1 foot in life and 1 foot in death. Because again, like we've talked about so many times on the show, it's all about facing death, facing one's own death. I'm going to read you from the book. And then we're going to get into the section one and actually start. More importantly, such premature burial is an essential part of the Masonic initiation ceremony of the third degree. To be ritually and symbolically slain, buried, and raised again as a feature of many initiatory programs around the world, from Siberian shamanism to quaint 19th century English secret societies. It is a liminal event. You are on the threshold of living and dying, and in that sacred spot, you can see in both directions. Conspiracy theorists are kind of like that. They have 1 foot in the world of mainstream history and culture, what Robert Anton Wilson used to call consensus reality. That's the world where most of us live. So that's the dilemma we're in, right? And a lot of people live their whole lives not realizing there's these two worlds. About the real world, the social construct, the matrix, whatever you want to call it. Robert Anton Wilson called it the consensus reality. And then you have this sort of, I don't know, conspiracy reality. Put on the glasses from They Live. Something like that. And that's what we talk about all the time here. And I would argue that the events of 2020, say of them what you will, they made a lot of people aware that there are these two realities and they're colliding. It could be a lot of good that comes from it, or bad, or direct tyrannical authoritarianism, dare I say. So let's get into the book. Section 1, The Production. And I'm just going to go through the notes. I'm pulling out some ideas that I found interesting. I'll sort of just go through them as the book proceeds. Talks about at the beginning, the invocation of Thoth by Crowley, published in the opening to this first section. And what he's trying to say, because in the invocation of Thoth, it starts out, Lord of the gates of the universe, thee, I invoke thee. Because they're trying to, what I think S.K. Bain is trying to do is convey that these Illuminati people, the Umbrella, whatever you want to call these people, working behind the scenes, working occult magic, they're trying to open the gates to hell, which Crowley was trying to do, sort of workings like that, Jack Parsons, all that. They had no problems with dabbling with the dark side. And like I talked about earlier, it's like Lucio Fulci's movies, H.P. Lovecraft talked about this, how mankind did magic rituals to summon Cthulhu from the depths of the swamps. There's talk about this book in 2006 written by the co-chairs of the 9/11 Commission, Keene and Hamilton. And they said that the 9/11 Commission was set up to fail because there were obstructions to the truth by the Pentagon and the FAA. Now, a lot of this stuff is more of the geopolitical spectrum, but as I talked about in the first part, 9/11 Conspiracy Theories Part 1, we talked about how there were a lot of weird anomalies that point to something else going on. And that's what this supports. FBI Osama bin Laden tracker Robert Wright told the National Press Club, quote, the FBI allowed 9/11 to happen. Again, support for part one. Hermann Göring, one of those Nazis, he talked about at Nuremberg that it's easy to lead people to war even though they don't want it. Which I talked about in part one with the false flags of Pearl Harbor, I think. They got to dupe the people into going to war because nobody wants it. Nobody wants to be involved with any of this stuff. They just want to live their life. Now, Hermann Göring said, just tell them they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for their lack of patriotism, which is exactly what happened. And the same warning was given by Julius Caesar. And there's this whole history of manipulating the public for the desires of those in power. In fact, George Bush said, that's one terrible pilot, when seeing the first crash. Now, either he never read any of these memos. I mean, they gave him briefings about this stuff leading up to 9/11. Osama bin Laden was on the FBI's top 10 fugitives list. They bombed the USS Cole 98. They were bombing multiple U.S. embassies. He knew that this was a threat. Fact. There were FBI warning memos, security briefings. So a plane runs into the tower, and he says, that's one terrible pilot. Because he's a sociopath. Which is the attitude of these people. Of the Bonesmans. It's always the ends justifies the means of these people. In the book, we revisit William Wynne Westcott, who I talked about earlier. You know, great minds think alike, I argue here, okay? And some of this stuff's going to be revisiting the ideas I've already presented. And hey, that's just how the cookie crumbled, right? We're both looking at the same things. That's why this guy's such a great writer. Because he's researching and saying the things that I'm saying. Oh, self-serving opinions. So William Wynne Westcott, this Freemason guy, right? He said that 11 is the essence of all that is sinful, harmful, and imperfect. As opposed to the decad, which it is perfect. That's number 10. And he talks about Crowley said 11 is the number of magic itself, the sacred number par excellence of the new aeon. We talked about this at length already. He also finds the same point of the Twin Towers being the Pillar of Hermes. I talked about the Twin Towers in terms of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the Pillars of Hercules. He talks about the Pillar of Hermes. Now, one thing here that I don't recall reading in this book, I read it in a different book about the foundation of alchemy. The gist of what we're talking about, you go back to Zeptepi, the time of the first Egyptian gods, the idea that these pagan gods were walking amongst men and women, and they say Thoth, a.k.a. Hermes, same name, right? Or same person, two different names, Greeks and the Egyptians and stuff, were sharing the same thoughts and histories. Well, Thoth or Hermes, whatever, this god was teaching man about magic and conjurations and black arts. And that's where alchemy comes from, alchem, meaning the fertile black soil around the Nile. And the idea was that there was a great flood because God was like, hey, don't be teaching these people occult dark arts. I'm hitting you with the flood. So in the Pillar of Hermes, supposedly were the secrets of Thoth or Hermes. And the idea is that these were then transcribed onto emerald tablets found in the Library of Alexandria. Then when that got raided, it got handed down through oral tradition through the secret societies and all that stuff. But in the book, S.K. Bain talks about how the Twin Towers were the Pillar of Hermes, the symbolic boundary between this realm and the next. Hermes is the deified trickster, pointing to the writings of Homer and Hesiod to confirm such. It says it opened up a doorway, opened up a gateway. It's the symbolic tearing of the veil of Isis, a portal revealing the Holy of Holies. This is the tearing of the fabric when you look at the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below, which, of course, I always talk about this, talks about how the cosmos are connected to the cosmos, or the macro, is always connected to the earth or the micro, meaning the magician has a connection to the stars. And the magician, with the right tools, with the dark arts, can cause changes in reality. So they're saying they're tearing this portal open so that they can continue to carve out the reality they want, which is a Luciferian New World Order. Then he talks about Crowley's vision of the new aeon. And he says how this is the same as the goals of the Bavarian Illuminati, a secular global order with the elite ruling over the weak, embracing Darwinism. Crowley said, and I quote, "You will observe that I am advocating an aristocratic revolution, and so I am." And that's what I've been talking about with this Great Reset stuff. If you listen to my, what did I got, 6 episodes on the Great Reset? Klaus Schwab and Company from the World Economic Forum, the top richest 1,000 corporations, are out here trying to convince you that they're looking out for your best interest. And I don't know if you're like me, but I'm very skeptical of corporate America, corporate takeovers, the greed. And clearly, with the wealth gap and the fact that CEOs are from most companies are making an exorbitant amount more than their workers, it's clear that I don't want them redistributing the wealth, because they will just take more because they have a mental illness. And that's what Crowley wanted, and that's what the Illuminati wanted. They think you're dumb. They think the sheep need to be led to slaughter. They're the chosen elite. And this isn't much different than that prosperity gospel nonsense that Joel Osteen teaches. To throw a bone to my non-Christians out there. And the book goes into detail about why Crowley was such a bad guy. Most importantly, it discusses how the world's elite are obsessed with these Illuminati values, which are in perfect accord with Crowley's religion, Thelema. And if you don't know much about Crowley, because we don't want to hijack the conversation, no pun intended there, excuse me. We don't want to hijack the conversation. I actually did, and this was, I probably should have done this on the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast, but I ended up doing it on Breaking Social Norms. Because on that show, again, to plug that show again, on Breaking Social Norms, it's me and my wife, Josie Weishaupt, and we talk about a variety of subjects. And every now and then, every couple shows or so, we break down conspiracies for the normies, because that's my wife. She's a normie. She doesn't get it. She thinks we're crazy. But when I explain things to her, she comes to my side. She's getting red-pilled. And anyway, I did a whole show. I did two shows on Aleister Crowley explaining who he was, why he's a bad guy. I mean, we're talking like, what, 4 hours? And you can find that on the Breaking Social Norms podcast feed everywhere. It was back in March of 2021. But long version short, Crowley's a bad guy. Turns out. Another elitist born into money who thinks that people are dumb and he should be able to do whatever he wants. Do what thou wilt, right? Well, Crowley plays a big role in 9/11 because of all the numerology and the books that Crowley wrote. One book, and they call him Liber, right? L-I-B-E-R. It's like the Latin word for book or library or something. I don't know. I didn't look it up. But Liber 175, and he uses Roman numerals often, but Liber 175 is one of the books he wrote. And in that book, he says there's three methods to invoke or unite one with a deity. The first method is devotion to the deity through a ceremonial invocation. Reading from the spells cookbook, if you will, from the grimoire, to call up a spirit. Flight 175, the argument here that S.K. Bain is presenting, that Flight 175 invoked the deity based upon the ideas of Liber 175, uniting man to a deity. And Flight 11 was the number of magic, right? Because remember, 11 is the number of magic. And that was used to start this ceremony when Flight 11 smashed into the tower. That started this whole ceremony. And Flight 175 was the yoking to the deity. Now, besides the numbers coinciding, there's not a lot else there. But you got to look at this from... You got to make it through the next two shows. And you're going to see so much stuff that you're going to say, my God, did they do this thing? Is this real? Seems like it. I clearly don't know. But this makes more sense to me than what the news is telling me. Maybe I'm crazy. And this is the idea overall is the same as like the Church of Satan. Psychodrama rituals. You get your mind conditioned and prepared for contact with the divine, with the gods, using symbolism and theater pageantry. In Liber 175, I found a copy here. I'm going to read you from it because I wanted to know more. Like, how does Liber 175 connect with Flight 175 besides the numbers, right? It talks about, listen to this. I'm going to read you first. It says, this is the heart of the devotee. and should be symbolically represented by that room or spot which he loves best. And the dearest spot therein shall be the shrine of his temple. It is most convenient if this shrine and altar should be sequestered in woods or in a private grove or garden, but let it be protected from the profane. Now they're talking about the, because a space in a ritual sense, the set, the setting, is very important. And he says it has to be a place where man loves best. And the location loved best, I can't think of a place more fitting than New York City. The heart of New York City at that, Manhattan, with the largest building in it. And like we talked about earlier, I don't think it's a coincidence that most movies are filmed in New York City. Most of the big movies, the setting is in New York City. It also talks about how, in the book, it talks about Bush being quiet and then the sacrifice happening in a very cryptic manner. I'll read to you and then we'll talk. In verse 44 of Liber 175, it says, "During this practice, it is most wise that the philosophist utter no word concerning his working, as if it were forbidden love that consume him. But let him answer fools according to their folly, for since he cannot conceal his love from his fellows, he must speak to them as they may understand. And as many deities demand sacrifice, one of men, another of cattle, a third of doves, let these sacrifices be replaced by the true sacrifices in thine own heart. Yet if thou must symbolize them outwardly for the hardness of thine heart, let thine own blood and not another's be spilt before the altar. The exceptions to this rule..." Okay, you don't care about all that. Which is magic nerd stuff. "Nevertheless, forget not that this practice is dangerous and may cause the manifestation of evil things, hostile and malicious, to thy great hurt. Of this it shall be understood that nothing is to be spoken, nor need anything to be spoken to him that hath wisdom to comprehend the number of this paragraph. And this sacrifice is fatal beyond all, unless it be a sacrifice indeed. Yet there are those who have dared and achieved thereby. Here it is spoken of actual mutilation. Such acts are abominable, and while they may bring success to this method, form an absolute bar to all further progress, and they are in any case more likely to lead into madness than to samadhi. He indeed who purposed them is already mad." So what's all that nonsense saying? It says the magician should utter no word about the ritual. Okay? That's Bush when he sat there quiet for 8 minutes or whatever it was. Then it says that the deities demand sacrifice, one of men. Let thine own blood and not another's be spilt before the altar. Which, I don't know how that fits in. I read that as like, that's like saying, you know, you would slice yourself instead of another person's. I don't really get that. But I'm not a magician. And it says, "Forget not this practice is dangerous and may cause the manifestation of evil things." So there you go. They're evoking these deities, these evil deities, through that ritual. Flight 175. Flight 11. That's the argument. Which I wish... And that's what I want to get into with SK Bane if I get him on the show. I don't want to commit to that yet, but I've got a busy month ahead of me. But that's what I wish on Tinfoil Hat we could have gone deeper into those ideas. Because I think it's very fascinating. But I don't really understand Crowley's writings. As you can tell by the flowery language, it's like, dude, what is he saying? Is he just speaking nonsense? I don't think so. I mean, for having the following that he did, I can't imagine it being pure nonsense. Anyhow, in the book, moving on, chapter 4, he talks about the pet goat. And the claim is that the deity invoked is in fact the devil. The deity from Liber 177 is the devil. So they're evoking evil, they're evoking the devil, whatever, right? Well, go back to Sarasota, Florida, which has the nickname of Paradise, which S.K. Bane goes through in the book, but he was reading The Pet Goat to the children, and he read it for 7 full minutes after hearing that America was under attack. Remember that? Remember when the guy came in and whispered into his ear, like, hey, America's under attack, and then he sat there for 7 minutes. And Michael Moore did a good job of critiquing that decision. Seems crazy to me, too. I mean, Bush says, well, I didn't want to alarm the kids. Like, bro, alarm the kids? What are you talking about? I mean, 20 years later, they're traumatizing the hell out of these kids with another thing. So, that doesn't seem like it's a good strategy. But anyway, in the book, he's talking about how the goat is symbolic of Pan, the deity representing the devil, a.k.a. the goat of Mendes, a.k.a. the Baphomet. The Baphomet, of course, symbolizes the alchemical idea of nature as God, with nature's natural duality and opposing concepts like male, female, light, dark. You get the picture. I've talked about the Baphomet so many times on the show, but if you look him up, you'll notice all those it's like a male goat with female breasts, right? It's symbolic of embracing the opposites. It's kind of like when I talked about on part two, the Kundalini serpent and the energy channel. The Shiva and Shakti meeting in the mind, the alchemical wedding, the sacred marriage. All these terms are suggesting the same thing. And that's what the Baphomet represents. But the story of the pet goat is a very interesting idea here. If you look at the story, it's supposedly about an overbearing authoritarian father with a misbehaving goat who actually saves the day. S.K. Bain explains the story that way, and it made me laugh. He wrote, praise the goat, because that's the idea here, is that the rebel angel, the rebel goat, is actually the good guy here, and the father is overbearing and he's a real dick. Now, speaking of being a real dick, you know I don't trust any of these truthers, right? Trust but verify, I guess, is a better attitude I should have. I actually bought a copy of what is supposed to be the book that contains the pet goat. I haven't got it in the mail yet. It's taking the freaking slow boat. I don't know what's taking so long. The book I ordered, which supposedly has the pet goat story in it, is called Storybook 1, Reading Mastery 2 by Elaine Bruner Siegfried Engelmann. And I'm waiting for it to show up in my mailbox so I could tell you if what S.K. Bain says here is true, because I'm fact-checking it. And so far, everything I read in the book was, like, pretty accurate, so I don't have a reason to not believe him, but I find that curious. And I think just out of sheer curiosity, I want to know. So we'll talk about that when I get the book in. Maybe I'll get it before part 4. We'll see. But the idea here is that in the book, the tale, you know, this is much like Janet Jackson exposing her nipple at the Super Bowl became like the most Googled term in history. Everyone wanted to take a look. And what was around that nipple? It was a ring of the sun. So in effect, the energy sent her way by millions or billions of people was focused on the sun. Kind of like this book, The Pet Goat. Everyone knows that's the book Bush was reading. Billions of minds focused on the same idea. And this idea ultimately is that the goat, Lucifer, sets man free from the authoritarian God, which is the Gnostic fantasy. Now, the Illuminati, or the Freemasons, whatever you want to call them, they want to build paradise on Earth in their fantasy of perfecting God's imperfect design. And in their history, Kronos, or Saturn, destroyed Eden by introducing time and constraints and measurements, the second law of thermodynamics, entropy, and all that, time and decay. And that the occultist, man, through the guidance of Lucifer, through the wisdom of Gnosticism, will recreate a better Eden, a real Garden of Eden, through science. Because science is so great. No thank you. Thank you very much, science. You play your role, and that's cool, but I don't want to live in the world you're creating. I mean, I don't want to be Amish either, but, you know what I'm saying. Not everything they do is perfect. In fact, when I say these nerds are going to kill us, I really mean that. It's a matter of time. They're going to do something horrific. And we're not going to know about it because they don't want to tell us. Then the coincidence is here. The Pentagon's groundbreaking ceremony. Guess when that was? It was 60 years to the day of 9/11. It happened September 11th, 1941. I'm sure there was Freemasons' cornerstone setting ceremonies. Flight 77 hit the Pentagon. And the Pentagon is on the 77th meridian west. It's 77 feet tall. Anton LaVey lists 77 infernal names of the gods in the Royal Palace of Hell. 77 is the Masonic signal for the Revenge of Lamech. That's an ancestor to Hiram Abiff. Liber 77, aka Liber Oz, is called the Book of the Goat. And it describes the Thelema Manifesto, where Crowley describes 77 as 7 times 11, which equals 77. The magical power in perfection, because the number 7 represents perfected deity, God. And you times that by 11, the number of magic, of evil and magic. And you get the number 77, which is all over his Star of Babylon, if you look at that logo. Oy vey, so much. Best quote ever that I've ever read is in this book. It says, symbols don't kill people. People with symbols kill people. I love it. Now, the Pentagon, he describes it as the lock and key for the pentagram. I'm going to read you here. The Pentagon and the 77 go together like a lock and key. And actually, this is more than a simile. A number of power combined with a symbol of power. A ceremonial vessel numerically consecrated and filled with living sacrifices violently penetrates into the inner sanctum of a five-ring, jumbo-sized heart of a pentagram in a spewing eruption of flame, glass, steel, flesh, and blood. This diabolical ceremonial act was designed as a key to unlock the powers of hell. Symbolically, or perhaps more literally than we care to imagine, unleashing them on the denizens of Earth. So he's arguing that much like the Twin Towers were opening up the veil, so was the attack on the Pentagon, the pentagram, the number 77. Now he rightfully so describes Flight 77 as an almost impossible maneuver. I mean, especially for the terrorist who was on record of being too stupid to fly. He did this 330-degree downward spiral in 3 minutes and still hit the target dead on. Right, you know, I mean, he flew in, I don't know, what, 50 feet above the ground? I've never flown a plane. Seems like that wouldn't be an easy thing to do without some practice, though. But yet, that's what we're told to believe in. Even when the feds took all those surveillance videos from around the Pentagon, we still haven't seen them. We got 5 frames of what they claim to be a plane. Could be a missile. We don't know. You think they would want to clear that up by now, but they don't. It makes no sense. He rightfully points out the Pentagon airspace is the most heavily monitored airspace in the entire world. Yet, They didn't evacuate this building? Even after the Twin Towers attack? They said they didn't know it was headed that way. Really? What's the point of all this then? What's the point of all these systems used to monitor and survey to protect the most heavily guarded building in the entire world? How would they avoid a nuclear missile? There was an E-4B surveillance plane allegedly in the skies the whole time, with the call sign of, get ready for this, Venus 77. You can't make it up. So I wonder if the number 77 was like a secret code term for the building of the Pentagon, maybe? But aside from that, Venus is the goddess which symbolizes the pentagram. When you look at the movement of Venus, also represented as Lucifer, the morning star. Can't make this stuff up. Now, chapter 6, moving on. They talk about Michael Hoffman's book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, which is another good book. I haven't finished it yet, so I can't give it my seal of approval. I started it. I actually bought it on, I think I talked about this already. I bought it on Kindle, and then I got paranoid and bought the paperback also. And I talked, I don't remember, where did I talk? I talked to you guys so much in so many different places. The people would buy my paperbacks because I sell the signed books, right? You know, I sell them on gumroad.com/IsaacW. Anyway, I sell those books, and I often hear people say, I got to have a backup copy. I already have it on Kindle if they ever censor you. And I always thought, like, whatever, you know, sounds good to me, buddy. And I always took the normie point of view of, like, that's never going to happen. But in the last year and a half, my eyes have been opened. And now here I am buying the paperbacks because it's true. Like, old Bezos can just shut down the Kindle version, send out the update, boom, there goes your content. Paperback. You know, when they talk about burning the books in, was it Brave New World? Or Fahrenheit 451? Fahrenheit 451. Temperature at which books burn, I think. They knew what was coming. It's a matter of time. It sounds preposterous now. Anyway. We talk about Michael Hoffman's book. Written in 1989, it pretty much predicted 9/11 and the power of numbers. I'm going to read to you from the book. From Michael Hoffman's Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. It says, the issue of controlling humanity with esoteric words and symbols encoded within a play, a media spectacular, or a ritual is one of the most difficult for people to comprehend. Even as modern man dances to the tune of the elite managers of human behavior, he scoffs with great derision at the idea of the existence and operation of a technology of mass mind control emanating from the media and government. Sounds about right. And that's what we've been talking about for 10 years now on this Illuminati Watcher project, about mass media and entertainment showing us their hand in so many ways, people doubting it, thinking it's crazy. In fact, if you're on my Patreon or my Rockfin or my VIP team, my supporter teams, I released a show in August where I went to SiriusXM Studios in LA to go on the All Out show with Rude Jude, the hip hop show on Shade 45 back in 2015. And they had callers call in, and it's a show full of haters. They're mean as hell. And I was talking about my hip-hop conspiracy book, which was featured in Complex Magazine a couple years later, right? They interviewed me and Prodigy from Mobb Deep. Big honor. Rest in peace, Prodigy. But anyway, the callers thought I was crazy. And maybe they just wanted to be funny. I mean, it's an entertainment show, so they let the craziest people in. And Jude even said it afterwards. He was like, you actually had a lot of people supporting your ideas. I'm like, yeah, I know, sucker. You know what I'm saying? And, but they didn't let any of them in. They wanted the fighters in. And I would argue that if you talk to those same people today, I guarantee they've got a totally different change of heart. These people that thought, oh, it's crazy, the Illuminati, you're nuts. Well, we'll see about that. But in SK, enough about me, SK Bain's book, Hoffman, he talks about how Hoffman further observes that ritual murder is mind control. Think about that. That's a very powerful statement. Ritual murder is mind control. and refers to the machinery of manipulation as a technological tyranny so immense it is difficult to grasp. It is both a physical technological tyranny as well as a tyranny of the mind. It's hard to put your arms around this thing. That's one thing I have learned over the years. Now, Hoffman, a little background to support what he's saying. He was a reporter for the Associated Press, which I have in my notes here. It's kind of like David Icke. He was a journalist, too. Like, a lot of these guys that get in the news, they see how the pieces fit together, and then they say, holy crap. In fact, I'm not going to name names, but there's a person who works in the news arena who follows me and hits me up sometimes, and I would argue that this person obviously must see something too. I don't have any good inside scoops. If this person is listening, I would like to get the inside scoops. If there's a reason why this person is into this stuff, maybe they've seen something. We've all seen that clip of all the different news stations around the country repeating the same verbatim script, right? From like, what, Sinclair Communications or whoever owns the news. Sinclair, a name of the Knights Templar bloodlines. It's all connected. And how curious is this ritual murder idea? Ritual murder is mind control. Think about that. Think about the thing from 2020 that will never go away. Hitting like 6 million dead? 5 million dead? That's a lot of dead bodies from one thing. You thought 3,000 people dead was bad? Those rookie numbers. You got to pump those numbers up. Massive mind control. And like I always say, you know, you got to watch out for yourself here. I don't know that it's a hoax, that it's fake, that they're inflating the numbers. I clearly don't know. It seems to me it's very real. So, like, but either way, regardless, you know they're using it for their ends. They will use whatever they can to get what they want. Like how the TSA is still in them airports. 20 years later, they didn't go away. Is the threat the same as it was in 2001 and 2? Probably not. Still there, though. You know, Big Brother takes a little bit of your privacy and security and freedom. Big Brother never gives it back. But when you talk about ritual murder as mind control, the target is always the subconscious mind in terms of occult rituals. This is what James Selby Downard was talking about, another one of these OGs in the conspiracy world. Shout out Ryan Page, who's teaching me about James Selby Downard. I got a couple of his books. I plan on reading through them here. It's on the stack. And then chapter 7, moving along. Flight 93. Thelema Gematria is the game here for number 93. If you think of the term, do what thou wilt, shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law, love under will. Those are represented by the number 93. It's shorthand for all of that. And if you read Crowley's Confessions, he says, 93 is also the number of the secret word of the neophyte of AA. That's the Silver Star secret little society he made it. A word indicating symbolically the whole course of existence. So they're just another fun play on numbers. 93 shows up in 9/11 and Crowley's world significantly. The number of the secret word of the initiate for his Silver Star group. Silver Star, we talked about a while ago, as a reference to Sirius. The sun behind the sun, the real god, the Gnostic god that they worship, who wants death and destruction to destroy God's earth and God's creatures. That was also the flight. Allegedly Dick Cheney approved shooting that plane down. And again, so many weird anomalies with this thing. It's crazy, but we're not going through that. We're going through occult stuff, okay? Then he talks about it. Like I said, there's a lot we're not going to cover on this show. White Horse Flight 85, some more Crowley connections, World Trade Center 7, which, you know, I guess we should talk about that. Yeah, let's talk about that. Then we're going to wrap it up. And I'll come hit you up and we'll finish the book on the next show. The footage shows Building 7 imploding like a controlled demolition, just like the Twin Towers. And if you remember, I remember there being people panicked that every building in New York was going to crumble. You remember that? Like it was going to be a ripple effect when Building 7 dropped. Now, what S.K. Bain claims in here, and I didn't fact check this, but it sounds reasonable enough. Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, he had an emergency operations center in Building 7 on the 23rd floor, no less, the number for Robert Anton Wilson's idea of the law of fives. Everything is in the law of fives. And you know, the Jim Carrey movie, the number 23, same idea, patterns. Anyway, on the 23rd floor of Building 7 was the Emergency Operations Center for New York City. Even though everyone warned Giuliani not to set up that center that close to the World Trade Center. Now, on top of that, it turns out there was a whole gang of diesel fuel for backup generators underneath it. And they claim that a fire started and it ignited all this fuel, which I don't know. I'm not the guy for that, but that's what the claim is. And it melted the trusses, just like the jet fuel melted the steel beams, and now everything's falling apart. And the theory is that Building 7 wasn't the emergency operations center to respond to 9/11, but instead it was to control the events of 9/11, and they needed to take it down to get rid of the evidence. Because Building 7 is the optimal place to control all the events. If you look at Larry Silverstein, the guy that bought the Twin Towers in July 2001 and got the big payout on the insurance policy, he said this. Quote, ironically, weighing in apparent support of the latter notion was none other than the owner of the building, Larry Silverstein, who stated in a 2002 PBS documentary entitled America Rebuilds, I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire, and I said, we've had such terrible loss of life, maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse. After 2 years of stonewalling, Silverstein Properties finally responded to numerous questions concerning what Mr. Silverstein meant when he used the phrase pull it, which most people would assume to mean bring down by controlled demolition. Their explanation? He meant pull the firefighters from the building. And exactly which firefighters would those be? The ones that had withdrawn at 11:30 a.m. over 5 hours earlier? So they're saying there were no firefighters in there. And Silverstein's like, well, when I said pull it, I didn't mean a controlled demo. I talk about pulling the firefighters. And they're like, well, there were no firefighters, first off. Second off, no one uses that phrase. Pull it? You mean pull them? Because none of it makes sense. None of it makes sense. And in Bain's book, he talks about how Building 7 was also called, you're not going to believe this, the Solomon Brothers Building. Isn't that appropriate? Right across the street from the Twin Towers, the Solomon Brothers Building. So think about this symbolically from the perspective of the occultist. The twin pillars, the Twin Towers, Boaz and Jachin, were at the entrance to Solomon's Temple, the Solomon Brothers building. How perfect. Now, Hiram Abiff was the architect of Solomon's Temple, right? In Freemasonic lore. Which, you know, the temple was built by divine influence, and Solomon had this ring to control these spirits and black magic and all this stuff. The Bible says Solomon's temple was designed by God, but Hiram Abiff is referenced in occult teaching as part of the Osirian mysteries of the death and resurrection cults. So, I don't know what the truth is. I wasn't around back then. But the idea of Building 7, it was built in the shape of a trapezoid with 47 floors. And in the book, he relates that to Anton LaVey's Order of the Trapezoid and Pythagoras' theorem, the 47th problem of Euclid. And if you look at the 47th problem of Euclid, it's the... you've seen the symbol before, this Masonic symbol of the three squares and that 3-4-5 ratio. Euclid was known as the father of geometry. And it goes back to laying out foundations of buildings based on stars and finding the right angles to make a perfect square. And creating the perfect foundation to build upon. The perfect creation of man using art and science. Which is what they want to do. They want to lay down the perfect foundation to create the perfect society for the perfect man. And that's what we'll go through in the final part of our four shows on 9/11. Where we'll conclude our book club of the most dangerous book, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual by S.K. Bain. We're going to talk more about Crowley and astrology and the Statue of Liberty. I'm going to talk some smack about Brad Meltzer. We're going to go into Sirius, pretty deep dive into Sirius. You're going to hear about how, you're not going to believe this, but 9/11 in Egypt is New Year's Day. Sounds crazy, but you got to hang in there. We're going to talk about the monolith, because that plays a role in all this. Yes, the monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey. Revelation of the Method, and what this whole thing is all about from the perspective of occult rituals. Thank you for joining me thus far. Look, if you like the show, here's what you can do. I always ask you to do things. Leave a review. It's free, and it helps the show out. What better thing we can do for each other? Drop a review, and in fact, on top of that, I'm going to read them. Not on air, but I'm going to read all of them on October 31st, and then I'm not reading them again. I just got to stay fresh in the algorithm, because they're putting, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's like other shows, like there's a show called Conspiracy Theories, and the hosts are shills. Okay, I'll say it. I'll start a little truth or drama. Like they talk about every conspiracy, but they won't commit to any of them. And I get it. Like, I don't commit to every conspiracy either. But, like, they don't believe in nothing. They just tout the mainstream narrative. Like, well, you see, Snopes says that this couldn't have happened. Like, oh, really? They're just... And that's why they get to the top of the algorithm. That's why they show up first when you search for Conspiracy Theories podcasts. But there's one way we can fight that. That's with good reviews. If you drop a 5-star... Don't drop a 1-star, okay? You're just going to hurt the cause. Drop a 5-star. You can say mean things about me. I'll read it. But make it a 5-star, okay? That's what you can do for me until next time. Till we meet again. Well, we'll hit it with part 4 of our deep dive in 9/11. So until then, stay woke.